Raleigh, North Carolina. It's The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack, a podcast dedicated to the show Lost on ABC. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack. My name is Jay.
And I'm Jack.
And welcome to a very special episode of this eighth season of The Lost Podcast. So we've had some special guests on so far. We start with Rob Cesarino from Rob Has a Podcast, kicking out the eighth season here. And then we had the wonderful Joe at Joe Opinionated on last week, or not last week, but the last show that we did. And this week we have a very special guest, first time on the show, Josh Wigler, who does a lot of things, writes about Game of Thrones on The Hollywood Reporter, writes Survivor for Parade, is also on a lot of podcasts with Rob Cesarino, does the Walking Dead podcast, has also been on this season of Survivor Know-It-Alls, and also does their Lost podcast, Lost Lives, which should be a lot of fun to talk Lost with him today, as well as Survivor, Leftovers, I mean, just a bit of everything. So we're very excited to have him on. Before we get into that, we'd like to thank the people that make this show possible. That's our listeners over at patreon.com/Jay and Jack. We have over 113 patrons, and we are well on our way to our $1,000 a month goal at $760.50. If you'd like to become a patron today, you can do that over at patreon.com/Jay and Jack. That's patreon.com/Jay and Jack. Without further ado, let's bring on Josh to the show. Welcome, Josh.
Woo! Hey, woo! We did it. We did it together.
Looks like we made it.
Look how far we come now, baby.
Nice.
All right, hold on a second. I can't sing, so I'm not joining in.
I know, but it's usually I always have to carry the falsetto, and I love that I have Josh here to pick up the falsetto high notes. I love it.
Yeah, can we falsetto harmonize? That's going to be tough. On the fly, we're just getting to know each other.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, if looks like. Look how far we come, my baby.
Oh, that was all right. That was close.
That was good. That was good.
I feel I'm not needed.
All right, I'll go
watch the football game.
I'll stop singing.
Ahead and sing. It's nice to have someone on the show that actually can sing.
Oh,
no.
This is what I have to put up with, Josh.
So
welcome, Josh. A master of many things. Like, looking at the list of stuff that you do, I mean, I don't know. I look at the podcasts that we do, and I have a normal 9-to-5 job, and it's a lot. But like you're out there all over. So you write Game of Thrones for The Hollywood Reporter.
That's right.
You write about Survivor for Parade.
Yes.
And then you've been filling in for Fishback on Survivor Know-It-Alls.
He's been. Embarrassing himself on television. I'm just embarrassing myself on his podcast.
So wait, hold on a second. You don't have to cry as much as he does, do you?
I don't have to. And I don't do it on the air. It's really, you know, in the off, you know, the off periods between okay. It's like when I troll the comment section, it's no good.
Yeah, it's never read any type of comment section of any type of internet thing.
I learned that lesson.
So you do a Leftover show on the Rob Network, right? And then also the Walking Dead show, and then Lost show too.
Yeah, we've got a ton of fun stuff at Post Show Recaps, which is the scripted offshoot of Rob Has a Podcast. We talk Leftovers, as you said. Walking Dead is something Rob and I do. We do Game of Thrones when Game of Thrones is on. We have this new show that we just launched about, I guess, 11, 12 weeks ago at this point. Most shows recapped, where we're just, you know, it's kind of a catch-all podcast on Fridays, because there's just too many shows out there that you could do, you know, you could do recaps for every single one of them. And
that's true.
No one has the time or energy to do that. So we kind of just do it as a catch-all thing. But yeah, it's fun. It's not a bad gig if you can get it. Yeah.
Where do you stand on The Walking Dead right now?
Where do I stand on The Walking Dead?
Should we hashtag spoiler alert before we get into it a little bit?
Yeah, I know you did that with Rob. You had Rob on just as Glengate was commencing.
Yes, yes.
And I was the guy who broke the news to him on the air, like, Rob, I kind of think that Glenn made it. I think that Glenn's okay. And his meltdown on the air was really epic.
He was upset.
He was pissed. He really was. And it was great. It was great to behold firsthand. You know, don't shoot the messenger, but that's why we do it through computers. You know, it's really no real risk.
What was worse, Glenn, the conclusion of Glenn's story after 4 weeks, or the fact that Rick was surrounded by walkers all around that RV, and the next time we see him, he's running looking for help? How did he get out of the RV?
Right. I didn't love that they yada yada'd that. You know, at least with the Glenn thing, they showed us what it was. Granted, it was what a lot of people guessed it was going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, it was truly just the dumpster diving. But, you know, with the Rick thing, that would have been great to really see how he got out of the RV and to see him outrun those walkers and, you know, maybe get a few more cuts on his hand along the way. But yeah, I was more upset about the Glenn thing. I thought that the Glenn thing, you know, 6 seasons into your show, you know, everyone in the universe is watching this thing, so I guess that you feel like you can go for that twist. But it felt like, you know, don't play with us like that. We know what's going on. And especially after 4 weeks, we're going to catch up. And I think it's something that Lindelof actually said. Yeah. And I think it was his Variety interview, I think.
Yes.
After the big reveal, and I don't want to go into spoilers there necessarily, but there's a big reveal in episode 9 of The Leftovers season 2 where he was talking about how that's hard to pull off right now. And he points to the Glenn thing as like, you know, people are smart. They put it together. And I think Walking Dead, I think the people behind that show just did not realize how quickly were going to piece that stuff
together. It was almost like the next day or day later, like they already had that whole thing figured out.
Another thing that bugged me off the Glenn thing is the scene we see where we see Glenn back.
Yeah.
There's a door to the left where he could have just gone in the door. I'm like going, because the whole time there were some stairs, like a fire escaped. Why didn't they run up there? Why didn't they go inside the dumpster? Why didn't they do? I mean, I guess they had to have the dramatic scene, but I don't know. They dropped the ball on that.
I guess they had to have their dramatic scene, but, you know, and a lot of the justification that I was reading at the time was like, well, did you think it was a cheat when we did that with Carol back in season 3 when we made you think that she had died in the prison? But it's like, no one cared about Carol yet.
No.
You know, she hadn't shot up Terminus yet. She wasn't a badass.
She's not Rambo yet. She wasn't Rambo.
Yeah, it was pre-Rambo Carol, so no one really cared at that point. And you already did that, so you're telling us like that trick, like you're just gonna keep leaning on that because it worked with the Carol thing, kind of.
Yeah.
So I feel like 6 seasons into the show, it was a miscalculation. I think it was a pretty big whiff. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's insurmountable, but it definitely grinded my gears, especially as somebody who reads the Walking Dead comics. I don't know if you guys do.
No, not.
I know someone that does, but
yeah,
he wasn't happy.
So there's just like there were things on that level that I was like, I don't know, I see what you're doing. I see the trick. not working on me, buddy.
Well, let's talk about things that are working. The second season of The Leftovers, talking about shows that earn maybe their twists and turns that come on. This season has been absolutely fantastic. And we loved podcasting about it. I'm sure you have as well. This season's just been amazing.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's really great to just, you know, take, you know, we're at that point of the year where people are writing up their end of year lists, where mm-hmm. people are talking about like what were the best shows of the year. And it's, you know, it's hard to throw a rock through a window without seeing The Leftovers really high on one of those lists.
Yeah.
You know, if not number one on a lot of them. And it's really awesome because it deserves that spot. It deserves to at least be in the conversation for best show of the year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've loved podcasting about it. That's been one of my favorite podcasts we've been doing on Post Show with Antonio Mazzaro, who's just a super genius. He's been really fun to chat through Leftover stuff with. But yeah, I thought it was great. And, you know, as someone who's a huge, huge Lost fan who does not love season 6, doesn't necessarily love the way that the show landed, I was very excited to see Damon Lindelof stick the landing on Leftover season 2. I think that you know, the bar was really, really high all throughout the season. Somehow, miraculously, every episode, it felt like the show was just elevating and elevating.
Yep.
And the fact that they were able to really meet that in the finale with so many masters to serve, so many different characters to service. And he did it. You know, that whole team did it. And it was just spectacular. It was just an unbelievably, unbelievably great episode for a really, really great season.
Something that Damon does really well is kind of those redemption episodes. Character maybe didn't like and then turns it around. It's like, oh, I like him now and he's redeemed in my eyes. Do you think this season was a redeeming season or a redeeming, you know, thing that happened for Damon, because for so long, you know, he had to remove himself from Twitter and kind of just became a recluse a little bit to a community right. that really did love him. Do you think this season kind of redeemed a lot of that negativity that was being thrown at Damon? I think unfairly. I mean, again, I get it if you didn't like it, but there was just some mean stuff being thrown his way that I didn't think was justified.
Oh, yeah. People on the internet are horrible.
They are. They are pretty horrible.
It's not everyone. Not everyone.
No. But we're all right.
No, yeah, most of them are, though.
Yeah, you know, and I've been that horrible person on the internet. So, who, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, come in on a high horse or anything. But he went through a lot. You know, he got chased off of Twitter with torches and pitchforks. Yeah. And, you know, that sucks. And, you know, yeah, he's the writer of some high profile stuff. He was involved in Star Trek. He, you know, kind of sort of maybe brought the Alien franchise back a little bit. And of course, Lost, which was this huge cultural phenomenon that a lot of people, no matter where you landed on it, you just have to acknowledge that a lot of people were upset about it. Mm-hmm. But he's a human being. You know, he's a dude. He's a guy. He's a person. He's got feelings. He's a sensitive soul. And the amount of vitriol that was leveled his way was really astonishing. And I would, you know, I would run off Twitter also. I would stay the hell away from social media if I were him. And I don't know about redemption. I think that there are people who will not entertain the thought, you know, the notion of watching The Leftovers because Damon Lindelof's name is stamped on it. Mm-hmm. I think that they're like the scorned, lost, you know, the ex-lost yeah. lovers who won't touch it. I know many people who are like that. As much as I've been trying to, you know, kind of get on whatever little mini soapbox I have to sing this show's praises, and people will be like, that's great, I'm not going to watch it because Damon Lindelof and I don't trust him. And I think that those people are just not going to give it the time of day no matter what. And I said this on the podcast this week. I said, you're lost because you missed out on, you know, what was one of the most marvelously told stories I've seen, not just this year, but ever.
Yeah.
For me, he didn't need to redeem anything for me. You know, mm-hmm. Lost is still my favorite show, and very little could possibly change that. You know, obviously, yeah. You got surprised to hear this.
Yeah.
But,
shocker,
you know,
yeah.
It would be tough. You know, he doesn't need to redeem anything for me. But I do hope that for people who gave it a shot after walking away from Lost feeling a little scorned, I have a hard time imagining walking away from The Leftovers, certainly this season, and feeling the same way, because I think that he established what he was trying to do. I think he was very transparent about certain mysteries will get answers, certain mysteries will never get answers, and now you know that. Mm-hmm. And what you really ought to be looking for is something super satisfying on an emotional level.
Yeah.
And if that's what you're going into it expecting, can't imagine walking away feeling unsatisfied.
Absolutely. And, you know, to your point, those people that just won't watch it because he did it, I mean, I think it would be the ultimate green eggs and hamming moment for them if they really, if somehow just there was some persistent person who said, you need to watch it, you need to watch it, you need to watch it.
Yeah.
But I think the only thing that probably could hurt watching Leftovers is the first season was not as good as the second season. And I know it followed the book really, you know, almost to a T. So that's just kind of what they were working with. But it's almost like you have to get through a first season. It's like, the first season's okay, but God, the second season's amazing.
I know.
And that's almost, I feel like, the little bit of more of a hurdle than people maybe just having Damon Lindelof hate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what did you guys think of the first season? Did it take you a while to warm up to that first season? I know it did for many people. It did for me. It took me probably 5 episodes to really warm up.
Warmed up to it. I think the third episode was the Matt episode.
Yeah.
I think it was the red and green.
I thought it was Nora.
Was Nora the third episode?
I think Nora's the guest. That's episode 6. That's the turning point for me. That's where the show becomes, you know, interesting and good to really, really great, and from there moves on to special.
Yeah, so like that, the Matt one was just like, okay, I'm liking this. And I think they kind of find it where they focus on one character. It just in terms of trying to focus on something. And then I would agree, once the Nora hits, and then they kind of have the before the departure, and then they kind of go into the cabin with good old Patty.
Yeah.
And it ramped. It ended strong, and even to the point where I thought, like, the end of season one, I was like, okay, that's a satisfying ending. I would be okay if the show didn't come back. I would be satisfied with that. And that's why I think I like so far is, like, both endings to season one and season two, I was like, those are both very satisfying endings. Jack and Locke looking down a hatch and not knowing what's in the hatch at the end of the season. They've been very satisfying endings.
yeah, no one's getting a bag on their head, and you're coming with us. Yes. And where are we going? You know, if it had ended there, that would have sucked.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it just was announced today. Season 3 was renewed, and it's going to be the last season. So, what are your thoughts there? I mean, that's one, excited, but also like, wow, it's going to be done.
Yeah, well, it's cool because I had been emotionally steeling myself for the fact that the show was not going to come back. Viewership was not great. You know, it was not a super watched show. But if you're going based on how is it being received by the people who are watching it, again, like you can't look around the internet. You can't read a thing about TV right now and not see people just, raving and, screaming from the mountaintops about how good this show is. So if that's the barometer, you really ought to bring this show back in some capacity. Mm-hmm. And I think that this seems like a great compromise. And the way that Damon has talked about it in, the press release that that was issued announcing that season 3 was coming back and it was going to be the last, is he phrased it as, we've structured these seasons like novels, and there's a beginning and a middle and an end. And as we started thinking about that, season 3 can really be that ending. So that's exciting to me. I really love that. I mean, I could watch these characters for a long time, probably. Mm-hmm. I'm hooked. I'm sold. I'm on the team. But that could go on for too long. And we've seen that with a lot of shows. So if the idea is let's just shut this down while we're on a really high note and while we're really feeling the creative juice, let's just do it. And I'm psyched. I would have been okay if it had ended at season 2. If I Live Here, if that was the last episode that we ever saw, that was a really great final note that The Leftovers could be left on. The concern is like things worked out so well for Kevin. So I hope it's okay.
Yeah. Kevin's end is so satisfying in I Live Here now. Like, hopefully it would, let's go resolve somebody else's issues like Nora or something like that.
Right.
Well, do you think we talked about Damon being chased off Twitter because of how Lost ended and stuff like that. You think maybe in the back of his mind is like going, hey, go ahead and cancel it. I'm good after 2 seasons because there's going to be a lot of pressure on season 3 on him. I think they can do it, but this season was so good.
Right.
It was so good. Now you got to finish it up. And that's the hardest thing to do with any TV show is to finish it up. How are you going to get people satisfied? But I think with the only thing, good thing with Leftovers compared to Lost, there's not a lot of theories on what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think Lost had so many questions that there was no way they could answer them all. And that's why a lot of people were upset, because that didn't get answered. This didn't get answered. They didn't like the flash sideways and everything else. So I know if I'm a kind of a coward, I would be like, oh, I'm good.
Totally. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? I'm so craving. I would be far away from that as humanly possible. I'd be like, oh, season 2 is really good. Well, HBO, do you want to cancel this? That sounds good. That sounds good to me. I'm so glad that I have my mini story of redemption.
Well, that's a Costanza leaving on a high note. It's like, yes, all right, I'm out.
Yeah, yep. I would totally Costanza.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm done. But no, I think that's a really great point. And we have seen that with Lindelof in the past. Season 6 is maligned by a lot of people, even a lot of Lost fans, people who still identify as Lost fans. So yeah, the pressure is absolutely on, and I can just like picture him like, yeah, I'm off Twitter, but he has like his little egg account and he's just he's perusing the hashtag. So that's it's got to be alarming. But I feel like one of the other things you talk about how the show doesn't have a ton of mysteries that you're trying to solve the way that Lost does, and I think that that's by design. I think so. Good lesson to learn. Focus on the characters, focus on the emotion. That was always for me what was the best part about Lost.
And it's what he does so well, right? Like character development.
Yeah,
he does it. He's one of the best.
Right. But I think that the other thing, too, is there's got to be some, on some level, it's like, the thing with Lost was how it premiered so huge and there were so many people watching and there was just this, attrition that was going along as the seasons wore on of people being like, okay, this is getting too weird. The Dharma Initiative, and then like time travel, and then Island Mystic dude who touches you and then you come to his home and maybe you're the leader. So like, it naturally just kind of it narrowed down. And I think that now with The Leftovers, you're not going to have a big ABC sized audience to begin with. But I think a lot of the people that do hang in with it are probably, for, you know, if not the most part, but a decent amount, are those Lindelof loyalists. And mm-hmm. the people who aren't are people who've been really sucked into The Leftovers because the show has been so good.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to be said about, like, doing, like, this awesome naked rain dance when no one's looking, and it's just going to be, like, the greatest thing ever because, like, who cares? No one's watching. I'm going to just be awesome right now.
Yeah.
And I hope that that's kind of the part of the reason why this has been so creatively on fire, is because the pressure is on, as you note, Jack, because he has to come in and really deliver this final season, considering just how terrific this middle act was. But I think that there's just, you know, the volume is lower because there aren't as many eyes on there. So hopefully there's some comfort in that.
I would say that is a great comfort to it. And the other one is that I think this season proves, and we said it earlier, that he can stick the landing. Like, because every other season of Lost, it always had, like, the cliffhanger season ending. So you just kind of kept offsetting big reveals, and you just kept pushing it back. And this one, from beginning to end, it was a complete story. It was a complete story arc. And everything was so satisfying. So I think season two proves that... as we said earlier, that he has the ability to, so and proves to everybody that he can do it. So so with the less pressure, I think, from it, really, I don't even think it gets a million viewers a week, maybe 900,000 viewers, whatever it is. And then also the fact that he's kind of maybe gotten that monkey off his back of one of the bigger criticisms of his style. I think it could be a really good, he could match it.
Yeah. I think so. I think it's definitely possible. I mean, for him to top season two or to match season two is going to be it's gonna be a tough job because this season was so special. You know, transcendent. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like International Assassin for me is just an all timer.
I agree.
On television. You know, my immediate reaction to it was that was the best episode of Lost season six, and it's not close.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would argue season two of Leftovers, like as a complete season, would go toe to toe with some of the best seasons of Lost. You know, I think it could go toe to toe with season one of Lost, where I think the season one, the disadvantage is that they had to do 24 episodes. So 24 episodes of anything is a lot of work, and Leftovers only had to do 10.
Plus, in Lost, they had a lot more characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what helped in season two, is they trimmed a lot of the fat. And they added some great actors.
Yeah.
Not that the season one didn't have great actors, but I think they added a lot of really good, strong actors to the cast, and I think that helped.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, season one of Lost was just, you know, there had never, you know, there was nothing
Absolutely.
Like it, and it just landed with such, you know, I know that they struggled with vision for a while, and Lindelof has talked a lot recently, very openly, about how, you know, holy crap, this show's successful. What am
what
I going to
do?
Carlton, help! You know, he's talked about that a lot, and I get that totally. But you don't feel it watching the show. You really don't. And like
Not
the fact
all.
That you can get. What is All the Best Cowboys? That's episode 10. You know,
the fact that
you get there and Charlie hanging from the tree is like you're about to lose a family member. You know, mm-hmm. just you know, even Boone, you know, when Boone goes, you're like, no, not Boone. And he's like, really? I'm saying not Boone.
Thanks, Locke.
Bad move, buddy. But yeah, I think that to even entertain the idea that Leftovers could, you know, Leftovers season two could tango with that season or any other season of Lost. You know, someone was asking me about that earlier today. Like, what do you think? Do you think that season two of The Leftovers is better than any season of Lost? I'm like, man, I can't go there yet. I need to digest it. And like, just the fact that like I actually do have to entertain that notion for me is it's already a trial.
Right.
But you have to think about it. If you're a super Lost fan, if you're a huge fan of Lost, you have to look at what The Leftovers just accomplished in season two. And it was just such a realization of a vision. And, you know, nothing is a flawless victory unless you're, you know, playing a fighting game and you're, you know, just like pummeling somebody.
K.O.
Yeah. But, you know, it was as close as I've seen, you know, a big genre show like this do. So, it's competitive. It's competitive with the best season of Lost. And, you know, that's a really awesome thing to, if you're a big Lindelof fan, for him to have been able to come out and do that after what he went through is
absolutely. As a Lindelof fan and supporter, like, this for me is just like, There you go. All right, man.
Yeah.
Good on you, man. That's great. Well,
yeah, it's in the win column for sure.
Yes, absolutely. Well, for a show that is going to stick to three seasons, let's talk about a show that's on its 31st season.
Yeah.
With Survivor, Second Chances. And you're actually going on, you're like probably leaving this podcast to get on a plane to go to the finale party, right?
Yeah, pretty soon. Yeah, I
was listening to Know It Alls today, and you're going for like a big kind of live. You're swinging for the fences for the end of this season.
Yeah, we're doing something fun. So yeah, I've been co-anchoring Rob Sesternino's Know It Alls this season, filling in for the Fish, and we're gonna be live streaming from the red carpet, doing the Know It Alls show there after the finale, watching the finale in the auditorium, and interviewing the finalists, however that shakes out. Live on the air. So that's going to be awesome. That's going to be really fun. Yeah, the finales are cool. This will be, I guess this is going to be my my fourth in a row.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I've been going since Kagyan, since 28, the Tony season.
Oh, nice.
And I'm really pumped for this one because I was in the auditorium for Worlds Apart when they announced this cast. Mm-hmm. I got to go on location this season for the first time, which was really cool to get to do the pregame and the preseason and talk to everybody there. It's like, I don't know. I'm a huge Survivor nerd. You know, if there's two shows that I'm just like, you know, deeply passionately in love with, it's Survivor and Lost are my two. So to be this close.
So you have
to
like an island fetish is what it comes down to.
I guess
to.
I do, which is weird because I'm just like, I'm this doughy, Jewy New Yorker who wouldn't be caught dead. You would catch me dead because I would have died. You know, 5 seconds. And I'm also not fast, so you would catch me quick. But yeah, I guess I have a thing for these shows. So yeah, to get to go out and kind of, you know, I got to witness the birth of this season firsthand, and then to see it end. I'm really excited about it. It's really cool. Cool.
So I think because Jack and I have watched Survivor since season one premiered, as I'm sure you have as well.
Yeah.
And there's been like these finale parties and, you know, cast reunions every single season. And, you know, what's something for somebody that always watches it at home that maybe they don't know first, you know, you've been in this situation. Like, what is it like to actually be there versus watching it on TV? What's maybe something that people that watch on TV don't know really happens when you're actually there?
I don't know. I mean, in the auditorium, you know, in the room, there's tons of people. Everybody is rooting for somebody else. It's not always consistent with what you would expect, depending on the company you keep in terms of Survivor fans.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in Kagyan, people just like losing their minds for Spencer, Tony, who a lot of people would say played, you know, one of the greatest games in Survivor history, was not warmly received.
Really?
So, yeah, people didn't love him. I think because of like the, you know, swear on your badge type of thing. And,
really? Wow.
Yeah, I think people didn't love that. So, you know, he didn't have the warmest reception, and you could really feel that. So there's a little bit of that. Probst is fun in between takes. He really tries to warm up the crowd. They've got a guy who's always there too, who's always warming up the crowd and interacting with people. I don't know. It's a live taping of Survivor, and you're getting to watch Survivor history unfold in front of you. It's you know, the closest that you'll probably get to sort of seeing Tribal Council. So it's cool. It's a really fun experience if you can get a hot ticket. You know, tough to get in, but if you can sneak your way in, it's recommended by me.
Nice. So just get hired by a major publication, start writing about Survivor, and then maybe, just maybe, you'll get that invite.
I'm gonna start working on that tomorrow.
Right, annoy the right people.
Annoy the right people, and you might get in.
Step one. Annoy people. Okay, got it.
What have you guys been podcasting about the season? Are you excited about where we are going into the finale with the six people we've got left? I haven't gotten to listen to what your take was on Final Seven. What are you guys feeling right now?
As a Jeremy fan, and I was a fan his first season, like I was very happy because there's the edit of this season has been so crazy in that like there's been so many votes where just the way the story was going and what you're seeing unfold on TV didn't end up being what actually happened at the vote, which honestly, as a viewer, I liked in that because sometimes, you know, they try to divert your attention to something else when it comes to vote time, but just end up being the same boring vote you probably thought would have happened. And this season, I think it's been so great that so many of these players had such a desire and thirst to come back onto the show that, I mean, it's like every week you don't know really what's going to happen, and every week something changes. And every week is just, as a fan of seeing the game played, it's been really satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, like, you know, everybody has been, you know, many of these people you'd wanted to see on for seasons and seasons seasons. But everyone is voted on, so you've got a vested interest in almost everybody, or at least a gigantic portion of the cast, and there's no week where it's not going to hurt on some level that you lose someone.
Like, my wife,
you guys were saying, they're playing the game. Yeah. That's the best part. It's not like when Boston Rob won when he was with eight people that said, okay, I'm just happy to finish second.
Right, right.
And it was a terrible year. It was just like,
I think that's last place. I think if you were, you know, if gun to my head, I love you know, I'll find something to love in almost any season of the show,
right.
But gun to my head, you know, I don't think you'd even, I think all you would have to say is like, I'm going to put a gun to your head and I would just say Redemption Island.
Right.
That's the one.
It just bothered me. But this one, like Jay said, you know, you're saying, it's just, you never know how the vote's going to go. Sometimes they try to mix it up and go, okay, they throw some things in and you know it's going to be that person anyway.
Yeah.
But even last night, I wasn't positive Abby was going to go home because I think that was the wrong move.
Yeah,
I was
like, Spencer, take Tasha out. Tasha. You want to be final three. There you go.
You want to win $1 million? Take the goats with you.
Yes.
Take the goats.
Yeah, yeah. And I like Tasha, but I was frustrated by her logic. I mean, I get it from her perspective. She wants to keep the target off of her and maybe putting on to Abby for her is the right call.
Yeah.
But I just the argument of like, let's do what the fans want. We don't want to bring goats to the end. That's not in service of what the fans voted us on here for. I took an issue with that. I you know, first off, I would have loved to have seen Abby Maria in the final three because that's a train wreck. And, you know, you know that Abby Maria is going into the final three, like being like, I've got an airtight argument and, you know, I've got this on the podcast.
And you're all dead to me if you don't vote for me.
Yeah. If you don't effing vote for me, you're dead. You know, it's just going to be a disaster and you want to see that. So, I mean, I'm glad to see her as a juror too. When she was a juror before, it was fun. But like, I don't know, you know, and the other piece of it is not just for entertainment value, it would be great to see Abby, but gameplay-wise, if you can get there to the end carrying the bomb that is not going to attract any
that's
votes,
true.
You know, that shows to me that you played the game well, so that is in service of the game. So I took an issue with that logic, but, you know, I get that she's trying to say that to kind of convince Spencer and Jeremy onto her side, and to her credit, that seemed to work, at least for the vote. So, yeah, I agree with you, Jack. I think that was the wrong call to get rid of Abby, certainly for Spencer.
The only thing I can think of why they did it, because she's so unpredictable. I mean, she voted for Keith.
Right.
And I'm like going, okay, either she knew she was going home and just wanted to stick it to Keith.
Right.
Or she just didn't know what the plan was.
Right. Well, we know that Keith loves sticking to the plan, so
that's right.
All I gotta say is stick to the plan.
Stick to the plan.
You know, maybe. Abby had been so irascible the whole game that it's like, you know, you're this close. I haven't gotten to write it up yet, but I do the exit interviews as well, and that was something that she said to me today on the phone, was like, you're this close to the end and you can't put up with me for six more days. You know, it's like, you know, that's a good point, Abby. That's good.
I give Abby credit, you know, because she kind of takes it, you know, in stride, because some people would be just like, they don't like me that bad. I'm done. I'm out. But, you know, she takes it.
She doesn't
care. She's got humor about it. I got to give her credit.
But her mom's the same abrupt personality. So she's used to it.
Vera Gomez.
Oh, yeah.
That family visit was spectacular. It's just like the creme de la creme of family visits. But she does. She does kind of just roll with it. I mean, you know, at a certain point, you know, she was at the, you know, I've been calling her Hurricane Abby all season, and she's really just been at the eye of the storm all year long, where anytime there's some sort of interpersonal conflict on the show, you got to know that she's at least close to center.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after a certain point when you're out there and that's, you know, the day-to-day grind, just, you know, you kind of just have to weather it. She's got a good sense of humor about it. You know, she's been saying some controversial things, which are, you know, but that's just kind of classic Abby.
I was listening to Know-It-Alls on the way home today, and I was surprised that the theory that Final Four was so didn't seem like you liked the idea of a Final Four versus Final Three.
I don't love it.
Is this because it would be too easy, or just would be cause too many variables? Or
I think it's a lot of variables, and I think that already this season maybe has had too many variables. And okay. I think that if I have a knock against Second Chance, it might be, you know, yes, this is a really hardly fought game. This is you know, perhaps the most strategic season of Survivor that we've seen. You know, the level of gameplay and the relationships on the show are complicated in a way that it feels like it's never really been. You know, any season of Survivor, you wish that the episodes were longer than 42 minutes, because how can you tell a complete three-day story in 42 minutes?
Sure,
but this season, I feel like you really feel it. Like, you know, a lot of these relationships seem so deep and rich and complicated, and week to week they're changing without necessarily a lot of, you know, without necessarily being able to anticipate it, because it just, you know, a lot of it just comes out of left field because you just can't show everything. And I think there's a lot of possible factors in that. I think one, it's that, you know, this season, you know, Survivor is typically 39 days, but this was however many weeks before the cast was even announced.
Yeah.
You know, in an all-star season, pre-gaming is, you know, part of the game. But this season had an open pregame. This season had, you know, the period of people campaigning for spots on the season. Mm-hmm. So everybody who knows that they're going to be out there, if you're assuming you're going to be out there, you know certainly who some of your opponents are going to be ironclad. Like, you know, Joey Amazing is going to be out there. You know, Spencer's going out there. Mm-hmm. And you can take a good guess at who's going to be out there. And even the people who you're wrong about, you want to start forging relationships with. So how do you convey that on a show? So that's one piece of it.
Yeah.
Then you've got, you know, all of those pregame relationships and alliances that are coming into the season, and it's compounded with you want to break that up. You want to do what you can to, you know, from a production standpoint, to
Absolutely.
Make sure that's not, you know, corrupting the game. So you turn two tribes into three, something that had never been done before and is a really novel idea. But, you know, that really now complicates the relationships. And then you turn those three back into two, and then you merge early. And so just so many different things have happened that have really mixed things up, that for me, maybe it's mixed things up just like a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
So that the storytelling is a little bit hard to follow this season in a way that I don't think that it has been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Final Four would just kind of speak to that. Like, I think to the point of too many variables. It's like, I feel like there have already been so many variables that for me, I would just like for it to be, you know, the final three. You know, I love the final two. That's the great classic. But at least final three, let's not do anything, as Sierra would say, let's not do anything bizarre here. you know, let's just do the three.
So that's what you'd prefer. What do you think's going to happen? Because I would say all the variables they've thrown in this season, that would, to me, would make sense with the theme of keeping these people that have these pregame relationships, all this kind of thing, and just know the game so well on their toes.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I could see it happening. It's not what I'm rooting for, but I could see it happening. But the other thing that I could see happening is recent seasons have been in these finales, they've been having this, you know, extra reward challenge where you're playing for an advantage in the mm-hmm. next challenge. So these last few finales have been really challenge heavy, which has been cool. You know, it's been, you know, if you love Survivor for, you know, the physical component and sort of like the action movie component, it doesn't get more action movie than these past few finales that have really leaned into that.
Yeah.
But this season, having been so strategic, I could see, you know, taking that advantage challenge aspect out of it, and you're filling in that airtime with an extra tribal council. So it's just going to be a vote stacked tribal count, vote stacked final mm-hmm. episode. So I could see it just being like, it's going to be a really fast moving, volatile, strategic, you know, whirlwind of a finale. And that's more what I'm rooting for than the final four, just because I feel like, you know, that's too many people to have in there. And you're going to have some sort of ridiculous situation, some ridiculous voting spread that you're going to be like, so the winner, I think Rob said this on Know It All. So like the winner's going to have two votes, you know,
two and a half.
Right, right.
It will, though, that we talked about yesterday in the podcast, that you know, say that Tasha and Spencer, we have, like you're saying, there's so much we haven't seen. What if they're saying, okay, we take Jeremy to four, then we cut him loose?
Because
we don't think we can beat Jeremy. And so they take the four, and then Jeff goes, all right, this is the final four. And you get Spencer and Tasha looking at each other like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that kind of thing has happened in Survivor before. You know, the first final three in Cook Islands where, you know, Yul and Ozzy and Becky and Sundra, that's the I-2-4, and they're so airtight and they're so close and they're not having to make those hard decisions in terms of cutting each other down yet. But you got to imagine someone like Yul, who's a super genius, doesn't want to go to the top with Ozzy and is, you know, planning on trying to cut him somewhere down the line and now finds out that he's not going to be able to do that. And you know, that's I get that, you know, that makes the options of who your winner will be, that makes it more exciting for the legacy of the show. But in terms of the gameplay, I like the idea that you know what you're planning for. You know, I think in Micronesia, you know, the really famous examples, like a lot of people say Suri got screwed in Fans versus Favorites, because that was supposed to be a final three. James Clement gets medevaced and maybe that alters the schedule, and so now they have to turn it into a final two. And if it had been a final three, there's a lot of people who would say Suri had won, who had that situation on lock. So I think, you know, I think it's nice to be able to plan for that thing. I think that there's a certain level of the gameplay of the show that you're putting them through so much, not just physically, but making them think about, you know, all of these different possibilities and making them go through all these mental hula hoops, that to pull that card out at the very, very end for me would just kind of blow.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, if I was playing, I agree. But as a viewer, I mean that's part of the thing, though. Is as a contestant, you don't know the rules. Like this season, have, like you said, change all the time.
Right.
You have to play. Like, so I said, do I want to vote Abby out now? What if it's a final three? What if it's final? You know, I guess no one would think final four. But you got to start thinking. At this point, they should be thinking, who do I want to be on the jury with?
Yeah.
And I was just shocked that they voted Abby out.
I was too. I really was.
Because if I'm Spencer, I want to go with Kimmy and Abby.
Yeah,
and I got $1 million. I have $1 million. Even if Keith.
If I'm anyone out there, I want to go to the top with Abby and Kimmy. You know, that seems like the golden ticket. Although I feel like Kimmy has a better head on her shoulders than I think we're seeing.
Yeah.
Well, I think she does, but I don't think she would. I don't think she'd garner enough votes. I don't think she'd get enough votes.
I think I don't know what that combination is for her.
Yeah.
It's hard to see what her winning combination is. But yeah, I think that you want Abby in there because that's one person who's just not going to get any.
Right.
So yeah, I completely agree with you. I was really surprised that that's the way it went. I mean, I love Keith Nails so much. He's one of my favorites just because he's such a great character. And he'd been kind of quiet all season. He hadn't really been the Keith that people had voted back onto the season. He wasn't essential to the story or whatever, but he was so prominent in this episode with his whole mission to Mars and everything. I thought that we were getting set up for a Keith episode, Keith boot, which would have made sense to me because now that Joe is gone, Keith is, you know, he is the unlikely challenge beast. You know, he has what Joe in his exit interviews talked about, his hashtag old man strength.
They're not even worried about him though.
Right. Right.
They don't even tell him who they're voting for.
Right. So they must be thinking like, well, Keith can't even remember Tasha's name. So if he gets to the finals, you know, like what argument is that dude articulating?
It's very true. It's so, very,
you know,
very true.
But it's tricky because there's so many threats out there and people are playing at such a high level this season that, you know, one of the reasons why I think that this is a compelling season is because in Redemption Island, to go back to that, to the Boston Rob season, you know, it's just a cakewalk for Boston Rob is going to go there because he's just playing on a level that no one is coming close to. One World is similar. Kim Spradlin, who's my favorite player, who's
played. That wasn't even worth it.
You know, exactly, because like she's got that. You know, it's locked up, and it makes the season boring. You know, it makes it tough to watch. But you know, we've seen in recent seasons a lot of winners are people who were either strategically untouchable or physically untouchable, like a Mike Holloway who just, you know, beast moded his way through Worlds Apart. And what's cool about this season is that there isn't an obvious front runner.
Yeah,
you know, I could see. Really, the three contenders that I see right now, and maybe four if you want to include Tasha, would be Spencer, Jeremy, Wentworth.
Yeah,
You know, I think it's kind of an even spread across those people, and that's cool. It's very often not the case that you could say that about so many people this far into the game. So I love that. I think that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. But of all the things of this season, I think the most important thing that we have to discuss before we get to the last talk here is what are your thoughts about Savage's beanie?
I love Savage's beanie. Oh man, Savage's beanie really is the best thing about this. I'm really glad we voted that guy back in.
As an older person myself,
yeah,
I just wouldn't wear it.
Yeah, but it's like apparently this is his day to day. You know, this he's
oh,
like,
is this how he walks around?
Oh, yeah, really? That's what he said. Do you guys watch the Ponderosa videos?
Yes.
Most of them.
You should definitely watch. You should watch them this season. They've been spectacular.
I watched his with Cass was amazing because I think they were just like totally drunk at the end of that.
They video. Were. They
went from hating each other to like it was like Lindelof wrote it.
Yeah, yeah, really, and it's really like Lindelof wrote it because now they hate each other again. Like if you follow the narrative across these Ponderosa videos, it's so twisting and turning. It's great. No spoilers, but you should check it out. You really should. Hashtag jury happy hour did not have such a happy ending. It seems. So yeah, he's still got the beanie at Ponderosa, so he's not just bringing it out for the show. I don't know. He's great. Rob and I, Cesternino and I, we did this this Survivor retrospective project called The Evolution of Strategy, which is an audiobook where we were talking about every single episode of every single season.
Yep.
In honor of the 30th season last spring. And we would go through every tribal council. We would go through every boot. We would talk about it, you know, from a historical standpoint. And at the time that we were recording Pearl Islands and we got to the Andrew Savage eulogy, he had not been in the mix for Second Chance at that point. We were recording that probably a little bit more than a year ago today. Mm-hmm. He had always been somebody that had been talked about as possibly in the mix, but it had never happened. And we both said, you know, not only do we not think that it's ever going to happen, but I don't really need it to happen. I'm good. I feel like we're okay on No Savage. So every once in a while, I'll get like the stray tweet from somebody who's listening to that being like, you were wrong. And I will also own that, like, I'm glad I was wrong because I thought that Savage was great television this year. You know, the beanie aside, I don't think that he would see himself as a villain, but he was a great villain to me. So I loved having Savage back this year.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, they always auction stuff off at the end of the year. We talked, I think Jack brought up last week, that the beanie, I think, would be one of the highest auctioned items ever in the history of the show.
Yeah, but you know that just Probst would buy it. I need that. Savage.
Is Savage getting jealous of Spencer, though? Because Jeff has, you know, some strong love for Spence as well.
He almost let Tasha
was drowning. And he's like,
but he still has Spencer.
I didn't talk about Spencer for a second.
On that puzzle. That's amazing. Yeah. Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw somebody. Somebody was really funny about this online, being like, Tasha, are you good enough to stand up so we can congratulate Spencer now? You know, are you over your drowning incident? Can we hail to the king here, please?
Oh man! And last but not least, we are here to talk about our favorite show, not called Survivor. It's Lost.
Yes. Deadwood. I love Deadwood. We'll talk
Deadwood's
about Deadwood.
Fantastic.
That's my favorite show.
It's a great show.
Great show.
It's a great show. So whenever we have a guest on for kind of our when we brought back the Lost podcast to have this big 10th anniversary retrospective, we kind of start off with what are your thoughts about the show 10 years, well, I guess it's 11 years now, after it started, and over half a decade since it's been off the air. What is its legacy? We've sprinkled it out throughout this podcast talking about it, but looking back on it now through that lens of, you know, it's been a while since it's been on, what are your thoughts about the show?
I mean, I've said it already. You know, it's a favorite show of mine. It's untouchable for me. You know, a lot of great shows have come and gone since Lost even went off the air that I've loved tremendously. But I've never loved the show outside of maybe Survivor. I've never loved the show the way that I've loved Lost, and I can't imagine that changing moving forward. I mean, I was I guess a sophomore in college when it premiered. Mm-hmm. It was Wednesday nights. It was I had astronomy lectures on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. and I skipped my second astronomy lecture of the semester for whatever reason. I just wasn't feeling up to it. I was like, mm-hmm. They won't notice. I'll be all right. And I stayed back in my dorm room and I turned on the TV and just this show that I'd been reading about. I'd read like a review on Ain't It Cool News a few, you know, months earlier. They had reviewed the pilot, mm-hmm. and I saw that the second half of the Lost pilot was premiering. I was like, okay, let me check this out. I'd heard about the polar bear, and that sounds kind of dweeby. But let's see, let's see how they pull it off. Let's see if they can do it. And I was hooked, and I went to very few astronomy lectures for the rest of the semester. Somehow passed, not with a great grade, but I made it. And
they seized it, get degrees. That's important.
Truly seized the day.
Nice.
I think that's about as good as I got. But yeah, I was hooked in really quickly. That second episode of the show was my first episode, and I really didn't look back. And it's just been a part of my life ever since. Whether or not I'm actively watching an episode, or the show is actively on, it's often in my thoughts and in my mind. And I love these characters, and they've stayed with me ever since it ended. And I think that that's probably the same story you hear from a lot of people who are obsessed with this show.
Yeah.
You love some of these people like family members. Like I said about Charlie hanging from the tree was like, you're losing a cousin. You're losing somebody who matters to you, and you're so relieved when he's still here. And then, of course, when he actually goes, it's one of the most heartbreaking moments, not just in TV history, if you're a huge fan of the show, but it's like a life moment, you know? So I think that this show, it really connected with people in that way. It was a real entrenched in your gut and in your heart kind of show that was, transcendent of being a show. I know that you guys made it out to the lost 10-year thing in Hawaii, right?
Mm-hmm. We didn't do the 10-year in Hawaii. Sorry.
No, we did the sunset on the beach.
We've been to Hawaii when the show was on, but we didn't do the 10-year.
The fact that existed to have that event, which I was really hoping to get out for, and I wasn't able to do it. Like the fact that all these years later that's still going on.
Really
speaks to that. This show. Outside of the cultural legacy and the cultural impact, just the wider cultural impact of the show, the people that it really stuck with, it hasn't unstuck. And it has clung on to people, and I think with really good reason. And for me, I think that The Leftovers being so successful creatively right now really conjured up a lot of those old feelings that I was feeling about Lost back in the day. So I don't know. I don't know about what's the legacy of Lost. I think it's a living, breathing thing still. Mm-hmm. I think even a few years removed from the finale and 11 years removed from the premiere, I still think that this is an evolving thing, and that's cool. It's cool to see. It's cool to live through.
Nice. Awesome. And we ask everybody, what are their top five favorite moments from the show? And kind of as prep for the show, it was a little concerning if we had to narrow it down to five, but five favorite moments.
Most people say Locke dying.
Really?
They never say that.
Is their favorite one.
Don't listen to him. He's a Locke hater. I don't...
I love Locke. I love Locke.
Me too. He's my favorite character.
He killed Boone.
He did. He did kill Boone, that bastard.
It was more like manslaughter, my leg's bothering me, premeditated murder.
Boone, Boone, you go climb the thing. Yeah,
it was.
But Boone still made the choice. Okay, he didn't force Boone up there. With a gun or something.
Because at that point he was frustrated with Locke. I'll just go do it.
Yeah. I love Locke. Locke is one of my favorites, and I think that he's one of my favorites because he's not who he thinks he is, but because of that he kind of is. If that makes sense, mm-hmm. he's not the island shaman that he wants to be. It's not his destiny to be the leader that he's constantly being hyped up to be. He is at the center of this long con, and he's a pawn in it. But what he doesn't realize is, like, in his fall after his death, that he galvanizes a guy like Jack, who's like the complete antithesis of Locke when Locke is alive, to be the guy that Locke hoped he could be. And so I love, that final moment where Jack and the smoke monster, I refuse to call him Locke, when Jack and the smoke monster are in the cave in the final episode when he's like, oh, it's just like old times. And Jack's like, no, it's not. You're not Locke. You wear his face, but you're just some cheap imitation. You're a knockoff. That was just like such a great vindicating moment for me as a Locke fan. And I think that Locke's arc is misunderstood by a lot of people. And I think a lot of people think that Locke is just like this tremendously, unbelievably untouchable badass character. And really the thing that's appealing to me about him is that he is this sucker that the smoke monster describes him as, but that doesn't mean that the smuckers is pretty good. Doesn't mean that the sucker can't be, somebody that really you know, fuels things forward and has this great purpose. It's just not the purpose you understood. And I think that that's a really powerful thing. So I love Locke. That's just a...
That I can live with. I can live with that analogy. The Jay analogy where he gets like a fish back and starts crying over it.
No, I can't handle it. The argument that I have is Josh's argument, but he just said it a lot better than I've ever said. So...
Locke could have been a leader, but no.
No, I said his sacrifice, his death, is what galvanized and redeemed him in the end.
You never said galvanized.
I have. Check the tapes. We have 10 years of podcasts. We can talk about it.
And Locke, he was... Okay, stop picking on him.
Like I said, I'm always upset when... Go ahead.
I said it better because I said Smuckers and you must have said Skippy.
That's true. All. Yeah,
exactly.
It was just a bad peanut butter and jelly joke.
No, I always feel bad that because, you know, I was always pretty spot on with Locke.
Yeah.
And when Locke came back from the dead and it was Smokey the whole time, I'm like going, wow, something's changed this guy. He's so confident. He is a leader. He's the guy he always wanted to be. Well, it wasn't him. And I should have known. That's the one thing that always ticks me off that I didn't figure that out.
Right.
Even though they're saying dead is dead and all this stuff. And I'm like going.
Yeah. I mean, that reveal to me, one of the most exciting periods of time as a Lost fan was after the season 5 finale. And it wasn't because, like, did they reset the timeline? What happened? Did they all just get nuked? Is the final season of the show going to be about a whole different cast of characters? Like, none of that was what really hooked me in. But what hooked me in was that suddenly my favorite character was dead. He was like definitively dead, and I don't think that the scorpion was crawling on the side of his head yet, but he was dead. And some dude was parading around with his face, and you had no idea what had gone on. But if you started thinking about it, you're like, oh God, that's the smoke monster. And that's the answer to the smoke monster. And that's such a good answer. Right. We've been asking the wrong question. We've been asking, what is the smoke monster? And the question is, who is the smoke monster? And that's the answer. And that's just unbelievable. Yeah. So that whole summer of being like, so what is the smoke monster going to do? What does he want? Was just such a cool period of time. And then he's like, well, I'm going to try and trick all these people into thinking I'm a good guy. I'm like, none of these people are going to believe that. And a lot of them believed it. And I was very upset about that.
Well, the one guy would believe it. He was dead. Locke.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, man.
He would.
Yeah,
he would.
True.
Right, I mean, come on. All right. It's okay, Fishbeck. Relax. It's okay.
Oh, Fishlock.
There you go.
Oh, my God. All right. So, top five favorite moments in any order you want to put them down.
All right. Top five. So, I was listening to, in preparation for this, Rob is my partner in crime and podcasting. So, I was listening to what he told you guys. And I think that the moments that he identified for you are some of the most, like, decisively, hands down, iconic best moments of the show. Like,
yes.
Desmond and Penny in The Constant, that's really tough to beat in terms of the great romantic moments of Lost.
Oh, yeah. He kind of took all the ones that you would think would be in the top five.
Right.
You're saying he took the easy way out?
No. Well, I think that he had said that he had had this list of the best moments that he had cultivated years ago. And I think, you know, he was right. Those were all great. Those are the top, you know, that's the creme de la creme. Kimi killing Alex is such a showstopper. The time bomb in The Candidate is, you know, you're losing three beloved characters in one fell swoop in this really agonizing way. Walkabout is this moment where you are realizing that this show can be something incredibly weird and special. We Have to Go Back is such a game changer. So all of those, I think, are really the iconic moments of Lost. I would add Charlie's death, Not Penny's Boat. I think I would add to that list. Then for me, probably the number one, my number one Lost moment is the raft launch in Exodus. I think that that's my favorite scene in the whole show. And I think that, that's Lost when it was at its best and purest. So if I was going with best, that would, you know, my list would look a lot similar to his. So let me go off kilter. Let me go a little fringe.
Nice.
Let me give some things that maybe don't get brought up quite as much. And I'll kick it off with I'm a big fan of season 5. When Lost hit its 10-year mark, I did a rewatch. It was my first full rewatch of the series since it had gone off the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really nervous to do it because I didn't like season 6 that much. And I was really hoping that it was, you know, on the rewatch that wasn't going to sour any experience that I had in rewatching anything. And happy to report that it did not. I just loved it even more. So a lot of this is season five, and one of the big season five moments that I really love is outside of the time travel everything, although I guess technically this is time travel, is when Jack wakes up at the start of 316, when he wakes up in the bamboo forest again. Yeah. And he's back on the island, and we had seen him at his low. We had seen him in a moment of drunken desperation, shouting at Kate, "We have to go back. We have to go back." And since that moment, we have filled in that backstory of how he got to that point. We've filled in the story of how he was going to find his way back to the island, and now he finally got what he wanted. He was finally back. And contrasting that with how Jack wakes up in the pilot, terrified, completely unsure of where he is, thrown into this chaotic situation that he's just fueled by pure adrenaline, the difference in the way that Matthew Fox plays it when Jack is waking up at the start of 316 is really the transformation of who I think is one of the best characters on the show, is the back portion of Lost Jack, that actualized Jack. And it really starts here with him, you know, like diving off of the waterfall and helping Hurley and just being so cool, calm, and collective, as Rodney LaVoy from Survivor would say. You know, it's such a great heroic moment, and one that I didn't really appreciate until the rewatch, that I really loved how he just woke up in the jungle and just sprung to action. Like, yeah, this is where I needed to come back to, and I'm straight business this time.
Nice. Ah, good, good, good pick.
Yeah. Another season five moment is He's Our You is the Saeed episode where he shoots Ben because he thinks that he doesn't know the time travel rules yet. He hasn't had a chance to talk to Miles. Miles hasn't given him the rundown. He's been caught. He's being treated as an other. And the big Ben moment is obviously huge. But just like the one from that episode that made that episode a real standout for me on the rewatch is Naveen Andrews' performance when he is getting the truth serum from a Deadwood character. What's his character on Deadwood? Farnham?
Farnham.
Yeah. Who's playing, he's playing the Saeed of the Dharma Initiative.
Right.
He's their interrogator. And, you know, Saeed is typically a pretty morose guy. He's pretty serious. He doesn't get to goof off very often. But he, in this moment, is being given this truth serum, and he starts just saying this ridiculous stuff that the Dharma Initiative just has like no idea that any of this is real. But he's saying, "I'm from the future," and you know, and like everyone's like, "What?" And he just starts cackling and cracking up like a maniac, which seems a lot truer to who Naveen Andrews is, but was a rare sight for Saeed. And just the way that he played that, to see Saeed that far down the rabbit hole because of this, you know, drug fueled confession that he's giving, but also knowing where he is emotionally. He's back on the island. He believes he's in hell. Nadia died in his arms. He's become an international assassin himself. And it's just like at wit's end here, and knows that he probably has to kill this little boy in order to save the future. It's just a really great look for Saeed. And as someone who loves Saeed and didn't love how they handled Saeed in the final season, this is probably for me one of the last really amazing Saeed moments, and just one that on the rewatch just killed me. I loved it. I thought it was so good.
All right. Very good. Now, I mean, it's whenever people talk about it, the way Saeed ended up with Shannon, I mean, just people are ticked off about it and unhappy. Especially Andrea Gabrielle.
I know.
If you ever talk to her, she's not very happy about it.
So. Yeah,
you will bring that up.
Joe Garfine, who was on your podcast last time, she's a friend of mine, and she and I did a podcast with Andrea, and she was fired up. she did not care about that.
She doesn't hold back.
And she was in the sideways, too, so it's not like she wasn't around. You know? That troubled me. I think the thing with Saeed that really bummed me out more was, you know, he'd been gut shot in season five. It did not look good for him. You know, the dead is dead thing that you brought up earlier, Jack, you know, is a great rule for the show. And then if you're going to violate that, and if Saeed is going to drown and he's not going to make it, but then 2 hours later, he's going to suddenly wake up Kevin Garvey style, like at least pay that off in a really, really big way. Like, what's the reason for that? What's the reason that he's coming back? And is the only reason because he's going to, you know, run the bomb away the farthest, like, and be the first to volunteer to do that. So I felt like they never really paid that off. And if you're going to make that big rule, If you're going to violate that big rule, I feel like you got to do that for a really big reason. And I think that the payoff of killing Saeed right away in the season six premiere would have been better, just in terms of now you're really setting the stakes of your original Oceanic 815ers will die this season, and you know an Oceanic Sixer is going to die. I don't know. I feel like if you're going to bring him back, if you're going to let him live, at the very least, like you really got to pay that off. And I feel like they never really did. It was a great moment in The Candidate, but I feel like that was really it.
All right,
I agree.
All right, number three.
All right, number three. This is a weird one, and I like Kate. Can I say that? Am I allowed to say that? I like Kate.
There's the Kate haters out there. Jack used to be a Kate supporter. Now he's a Kate hater, but it's perfectly fine.
Hold on
a
second. Don't be putting words in my mouth. I'm not a Kate hater. I said because I never got it. I said, why do people hate Kate? Then we did a rewatch, and I went, all right, I kind of get it.
But in the end,
I'm always stuck by Kate. I said she's always going to be on. I'm always going to support her 100%.
I think that she's a great. There's great potential with Kate that's never really realized, or is rarely realized. Not ever, but it's more often than not she's a thorn in somebody's side. She's she's screwing up the plans. She's showing up to the hunting party when she's not supposed to be there. That kind of thing. But I think that Evangeline Lilly is just so spectacular. And good on her for all the success that she's got going on right now with the Marvel movies. And Lord of the Rings and all of that stuff. I think that she's a nice person.
She's very sweet.
I haven't done any one-on-one interviews with her, but I was in a group interview. She seemed awesome. She was very amenable to all of our nerdy Marvel questions. So at least she's even tempered. Would be what I could observe from her, and she seems great, and she's just a really great actress who was really plucked from obscurity, hadn't really acted at all, I don't think, before Lost.
JJ has that talent.
Yeah, he does. He really does. He's good at picking that. And I just think that her performances are much more often than not are really solid and often overlooked. And the big one for me, this would be moment three, is in another season five episode, Whatever Happened, when you're starting to see Kate's backstory, which is to where she was right before she returns to the island and why she leaves Aaron behind. And the big, great line of, I'm going back to save your daughter. It was just a really cool motivation for Kate, where it was like, it was no longer about, I have to go save Sawyer. I have to go support Jack. It wasn't about any of the men, except for, the only man in her life that mattered at that point, which is her kid. And the way that she says goodbye to Aaron is the moment, is just this beautiful Giacchino score is soaring as she is just sobbing, sobbing and weeping as Aaron, as he is wont to do, is sleeping and is just, it's just like comatose. But there's just this real profound sadness, because not only does she not know if she'll ever see him again, but if she's successful, if she succeeds in her mission, when she comes back, she won't be this kid's mom anymore. And there's just this great line that she gives as she walks out the door. She gives like one final tearful goodbye, where she says, goodbye, baby, and just breaks down more. And that wrecked me when I was watching. And I'm not afraid to admit that I openly weeped, with no one to watch me, because I was alone watching it. But I felt shame anyway.
Well, when one does have to openly weep, it is a little better if you are alone.
Yeah, it really is. It's a better look. You don't have to be judged. So I love that Kate moment. I think Evangeline Lilly is really, really great, and I think she's often overlooked on the show.
Very nice. Very nice. For the Kate lovers out there, I would agree. And having spoken to her one-on-one many times, even though she forgets us every time we talk to her, she's an amazing person, and love her very much. Just don't call her Evie. That's my one thing.
She's our Keith.
Oh, good.
She can't remember our name, so it's
there you go. That works. Does she drive you around in the tuk-tuk?
And she still doesn't know who we are.
It's like, right. I think I know you. It's like, it's fine. You talk to a lot of people. It's not a big deal.
Good. I love that.
But it's kind of a running joke. All right, so number three, what's your number two?
All right, number two. I'll do another season five, because why not? I won't do them all season five.
This is top five season five moments
I love season five. Season
that's
five
cool.
Really
hey, listen, listen. Like most people, it's like season one, season three finale, and a couple other things. So I appreciate the season five love here. I do.
all of this, I mean, everything about Lost, you know, even in, you know, some of the weaker episodes, you guys talked about what you said, like a lot of people consider to be one of the weaker stretches of the show recently with Joe, when you were talking about like Fire Plus Water and those episodes. And Fire Plus Water for me is bottom of the barrel. You know, that's it doesn't get worse than that.
That's your Boston Rob season.
Yeah, that's my Redemption Island. And even that has John Locke punching, you know, crazy Charlie in the face. And that's a spectacular moment. Even at its worst, Lost is still pretty good. And even though I hate you all, everybody's the diaper commercial.
Yeah, that's pretty horrible.
You know, at least it happened. You know, don't cry. You know, don't cry over it. It happened. And it was great. All right. So sticking with season five and sticking with Locke, I think the dead is dead moment where Ben is in the temple, he's underground, he summons the smoke monster, and Alex comes, and Alex tells him, you know, basically, you know, threatens his life, and says, if you don't do everything that John Locke tells you to do, I'll come for you. And that's such a powerful threat, because Alex is the big chip on Ben's shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
And Ben's not a guy who feels a lot of guilt or remorse. He's pretty confident in what he does. He's pretty confident that he's going to be able to wiggle his way out of any situation. That he's pretty confident that he's the smartest guy in the room. And little does he know that he is being played by the smartest guy in the room in the form of his daughter. And just I love the little clues to the smoke monster reveal at the end of season five. And this is the big one on the rewatch, to go back and see the way that Smokey played Ben, you know, locked, you know, showing his way and being like, I'll go get you a rope, and disappears. And now the smoke monster shows up and it's Alex, and then Alex disappears, and then Locke reappears. And obviously that's all the same guy, just, you know, running around wearing different masks. And Ben finally acquiescing to the point where he is going to bend the knee, and he is going to be, you know, he's going to be loyal to Locke, the guy that he killed, the guy that he has resisted being this powerful, special person. Now he's going to play ball, and he's playing ball for the wrong team. And it's a really cool subversion of this guy who is always in charge, the guy who has gotten the drop on Locke more times than he hasn't. For the guy wearing Locke's face to get the drop on him is a really, really cool twist.
Nice. Awesome. No, I mean, it's a great point to bring up. I mean, and it plays off of, you know, one of Rob's picks there, you know, when Kimi kills Alex, and again, it's one of those very emotional scenes. Everybody remembers that scene.
Yeah.
But without that scene, you wouldn't have, you know, Ben finally kneeling down to somebody else and Locke of all people, quote unquote. So yeah, it's absolutely great call.
Yeah. And then number one, I mean, I didn't plan on doing all season five, but let's just stick with it for consistency. See, what I was going to say, I was going to drop Trisha Tanaka in here, 'cause I feel like that episode gets knocked unfairly. I love Trisha Tanaka. I love the joyful ride through the jungle that a lot of people, I know that IGN did a list of ranking all of the Lost episodes, and that was really low on their list.
Really? I didn't remember that.
Well, I remembered it because I did my ranking for MTV about a year ago, and I ranked every episode, and I was going around and I was, you know, doing some research, like, what do other people think? And IGN had that really far down, like one of the bottom episodes, and I was stunned by that. But their explanation was that if you need a better metaphor for Lost spinning its wheels in its third season, look no further than Trisha Tanaka. And in the moment, fair. You know, in the moment that was the period of season three where, like, enough with the flashbacks, enough with, like, how long are we going to draw this out for?
Yeah.
You know, where are we going? What are we building toward? And, you know, I think that once the end date is set, you know, season three really does have this propulsive quality.
Season three, some of my favorite stuff. Like,
hell yeah.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Once season three came back from its little six episode mini season, I feel like most of those are really great.
The Nikki and Paolo era.
I love Exposé. I really do. But I think that Trisha Tanaka for me is like one of those last really great joy rides on Lost, literally. You know, it's Hurley, it's Charlie, it's Jin and Sawyer, at least half of them drunk, driving through the jungle and trying to get a small victory by getting this Dharma van going.
I love that episode.
And I know a lot of people, you know, think of it as a whatever episode, but for me, it's a top 20. So I was gonna say that, but just to stick with season five, I'd probably go with the variable and the big twist at the end of the variable with poor Faraday, who just has really just ice cold death.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's one thing to be, you know, accidentally killed by your time, you know, your time traveling mom, or I guess you're the time traveler. But the past version of your mom is the person who kills you. But the fact that his mom in the future, fully knowing that this was the fate that she was raising him towards.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Stephen King, such a huge influence on Lost to begin with. But that's like the most Stephen King moment on Lost outside of maybe Nikki and Paolo getting buried alive by Hurley. So I love that. I think it was sad to see Faraday go because he was such an interesting guy.
Oh yeah, he's great.
And you know, it was so central to the time travel portion of the season, which was I thought a really nifty idea, and I think that they executed it really well. But to see that guy go, to see like the Doc Brown of the show in the middle of the time travel story just get executed because of a variable he had not even considered, was a really cool way to end that story. So there you go. Those are my five.
Nice.
Nice job.
Kudos. Round of applause.
Five for season five.
Top five of season five. Five, five, five.
Top five, baby.
The five.
Well, awesome. Josh, this was an absolute pleasure having you on. Just fantastic discussion on every topic. Would love to have you on again sometime. We kind of do our episode-specific show, so I'd love to have you on that sometime if you have time. But
oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of arm-twisting to get me to talk about Lost. And you guys are legends. It's an honor for me. I mean, that kid in astronomy class, if he knew that this is where he was going to be sitting someday, he probably would have shot his future self because that's what his further future self had told him had been leading him toward.
Oh, that's high praise. That's really appreciated. Thank you.
No,
very
so
much.
Cool to be on here. Anytime you want me, you guys give me a call.
Awesome. Right. Well, good luck next week. Big week for you and for those listening at home. We kind of talked about the many things that you do, but for maybe if they don't know, any more plugs you want to put out there, Josh?
Yeah, sure. I mean, a jack of many trades. You said master of lots. It's probably master of none, but I do a lot.
Which is another fantastic show, I think.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I do a lot of stuff. You can check out my links. I'm very whorish on Twitter. at Round Howard is how to find me. I say like Ron Howard, but rounder because it's goofy. So you can find me there. Post Show Recaps is where I'm doing a lot of my podcasting. And really still trying to while Leftovers is still fresh in the air, we're still really trying to push that forward. So tomorrow, I mean, we're recording this on Thursday night. Tomorrow on Friday, I'm getting together with a few guys to talk about some we're going to do a season 3 think tank. We're going to try come up with some ideas for what the Leftovers should do in its final season. Do you guys have any specific things you want to see in the final season now that we know Leftovers is coming back?
I have one theory.
Let's hear it.
And I say that the whole time we've been watching the 98% that didn't depart, they actually departed. The 98% departed. The 2% are still in their real world. And that this has all been the 98% that did depart.
That's how
it explains how they can survive and all this different stuff going on. They've all departed.
That's so Lindelof.
Yeah.
It's almost too Lindelof, though. I feel like that would be...
I have put it out there for him. He can take it and not give me any credit. If he's struggling for season 3, I said, go ahead and take it.
If I were him, I would give you all the credit. If you guys don't like this, I can tell you who came up with that one.
Blame the other bald guy. It's not me.
I don't know, because honestly, if I was thinking if we did a similar type thing at the end of season 1, if we were going to workshop season 2, I wouldn't have had any idea of what was to come in season 2. Like, I heard they were going to a different city and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and I was like, even then, thinking about it, it didn't even come close to what I thought it would have been. So that would be a tough nut to crack, I think.
It was almost like the end of season 3 of Lost when you said, we got to go back here. I was like, right. Wow, wait, what?
Yeah.
I mean, I was shocked. I go, I'm not going to like this, but I ended up loving it. And then like Jay was saying, I'm like going, they're doing what? They're half the cast is not going to be here. They're going to Texas. It's one town. I go, and I kept seeing the previews where all the just wall waiting outside the line for the town. I go, oh, this is going to be stupid.
Right.
And it was great. So.
It was great. I mean, I think absolutely. I mean, I don't know what I expected seeing those previews, but I think I was thinking like, I certainly wasn't thinking, well, I'm about to watch one of the best seasons of anything I've ever seen. You know, that was not on my mind at all.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah. I think if anything, you would see what plays out of Meg's fractured GR you know, setup that she's doing there. They definitely set that up. Will the town of Jarden be redemed? Is that something that, because it was, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah going on, is that redeemable? And you know, what happens with Mary and her baby? So there's stuff that's kind of left out there.
But Meg got what she wanted. She told Tommy family was important, and
yeah,
the Garvey family is back together. You know, well, they're all, you know, it's an extended family, but they're all together.
And she might have a Garvey in her. She might have a baby Garvey going on.
I think she does have a Garvey. I think
you know, family is everything, and I'm part of the family. Take me home to dad.
Hey guys, I probably don't like me, but yeah, I'm here.
Sorry, plus, I blew up your town.
Plus, your dad is hot. So what do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, oh god, that could get real awkward real fast. Do you guys think that the show is gonna follow up more on the Australia stuff, which is obviously as Lost fans, that's been such a fun Easter egg this season?
Oh yeah, because I mean, again, like Australia in Lost was like this geographic key to something,
right.
Or even just the joke that, you know, in Risk, Australia is the,
right,
the
key to the game, yeah.
So I did love that. I don't know if it's necessary. You know, I liked it as this kind of background thing where I can't remember his name now, but that guy that kind of said he died and he came back from the dead.
David Burton was the guy.
His dad being there and coming through on the TV, like that. That it's fine in that space. Would we really need to go and explore Australia that much?
I mean, if they're trying to save pennies, you know, shooting in Australia, you know, they've got tax breaks, but to pick up everybody and relocate to Australia,
I mean, they probably wouldn't. Like everything on everything was shot in Hawaii on Lost.
Well, you just can't bring your dog, right?
Look like,
yeah, right, yeah.
Can't bring your dogs, and they're
well. That's why the dog ran off. Then
that's why there's a dog on the show. You can't go to Australia.
Right, right.
Even Johnny Depp can't bring his dogs. So.
He's not going to keep his dog in the kennel for 30 days. I don't think.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I'm so happy that season 3 is happening. For it to be a final season and they can really write to that and really wrap up these stories, I'm pumped. I'm very amped up about it. I'm very high on The Leftovers right now.
Yeah, because I think for us, I was like, all right, let's start getting, you know, the networks together, like where we're going to, you know, all the people, what we're going to do to rise up and get the show back on. And then they said, I was like, oh, well, that was easy.
Right. Yeah. It happened fast.
They probably knew all along. They just wanted to get people riled up a little bit.
Well, they sent the guilty remnant to Times Square outside of the HBO building. I'm sure that scared them into pulling the trigger. Yeah.
For sure, for sure. All right, Josh. Well, thank you so much. Have fun next week, and we will be in touch.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you guys so much. A real pleasure.
Awesome. All thanks, right. Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
Bye. Thanks again to Josh. That was an absolute blast.
Time just flew by.
Absolutely. Loved talking with him about all the different things, and definitely a big Lost fan, you could tell, and would love to have him on again down the road.
Are you okay with the Lost, the Lock Talk, though?
That's what I'm saying. I feel like Josh explained it really well, you know?
Well,
and I think he hit both sides, and that's where I think a little bit of vindication for myself.
For you?
Yeah, for me.
Whatever.
So at the end of each episode, I'd like to send a special thanks to those that make a significant contribution each month, and that's Tack from Tokyo, Eckhard Richter. Thank you very much. Thank you to all 113 of our patrons that make this show possible. Big ups and big thanks to you guys. And again, big thanks to Josh Wigler, who does many things, but is on Rob's Post Show Recap Network. Has a lot of show discussions there, as you heard. Can speak very well about all of them, so definitely check those out. As well as if you're a Survivor fan, closing out this season with Rob on Survivor Know-It-Alls, did a fantastic job subbing in for Fishback this season. But definitely check everything out that he does. And we'll see you guys next time for the Lost Podcast. We're going to do probably another episode discussion show on the docket there for Leftovers. If the Leftovers talk to maybe inspired you to maybe watch the show, hopefully you already have, definitely check it out and check out our Leftovers podcast that we've done for the two seasons of the show.
And give us a call. Because we've had a couple calls since. Give us a call.
Yeah,
on what your thoughts are. What do you think is going to happen next season?
Exactly. And for Leftovers, next week we're going to do a special ultra cast for the show with the Living Reminders. and The Guilty Remnants. So it'll be kind of a super leftovers podcast, which will be a lot of fun. That'll be next week. And I think we kind of hinted at it. We're also working on a special interview for the show. So big on Leftovers right now. Very excited there'll be a season three. So that'll definitely mean there'll be a season three of the Leftovers podcast with Jay and Jack. And as we're going into the spring, our Game of Thrones podcast that we're getting excited about with Nick, who's now has a master's degree. So
I saw that. The show. Are we even allowed to speak to him?
I think if he speaks to us, then we can speak to him.
Is that how it is? Because yes. I know how this royalty stuff works. So I got to figure this out.
And next week, our Survivor with Jay, Jack, and Colleen will conclude for this season with our post show of the season finale. And will Amazing Race end as well? Is that
Amazing Race will be over Friday, and we will record Friday night because I don't have to ref Friday night. So we're gonna watch it, record it, probably be up before the West Coast even watches it. But don't spoil yourself because you know if you haven't seen it, then you don't want to know who won before you know. Obviously. Before it ends, well, I don't want to get in trouble. People, well, you should have told me.
All right, well, and there'll be much, much more. You can check it all out on jayandjack.com.
Also, right now, you can vote on what you think Jay and I should do in between Leftovers and Game of Thrones.
But by no means is that guarantee that we'll do any of those shows.
No, I put the rules on there. I said we don't have to pick the one that gets the most votes, and if we don't like the show, we can stop after three episodes.
And we may not even have to do the podcast at all.
What a terrible attitude. You know, some people bringing up shows I've never even heard of.
But you can check that all out on our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JayandJackGroup. Also, you can...
Next week, the Married Man show is doing a special commentary podcast on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Which will be great, as voted by you, the listeners. So if you don't like it, it's your fault. Also...
Well, at least you got to vote on it. It wasn't like, hey, we're going to do Battleship.
All right. So without any further ado, we'll see you guys next week for all of those shows. And we'll see you next time on The Lost Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. All right, guys. Until next time, hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.